Hello, and welcome back to the BenHeck.com podcast. I'm your host, Ben Heckendorn.
And I am Parker Dillman.
Jones is not with us today because he is dealing with a family issue. So, yes, it's just us today.
Just us.
Yeah.
So, and you will like it.
You have no choice. So, Parker, we have some topic ideas here.
Okay.
Okay, so the first topic is, there's like 10 trillion games releasing this fall. So which ones are we going to play? Which ones do we even care about? And are there just too many games released for people to even play? You know, some of them have to fail. There's just too many games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, speaking of that, there's been a lot of chatter online about Battlefield 5, how it's, you know, everyone's worried it's not going to do well. So, yeah, I think we should probably discuss that because you and I basically buy every Battlefield title that comes out. So, you know, we definitely could put in our 2 cents as to what we think about that, why we think it may succeed or fail. Yeah. And then on the same token, the last game, which was Battlefield 1, I really liked it and you hated it. So we should probably discuss that, like how we felt about it and how that would affect our future purchase decisions and, or, you know, just, you know, people in general, the general audience.
Yeah.
Also thought we could talk about projects we've been working on since I no longer have the show. People probably don't know what I'm doing. So I could talk about that and you could talk about what you've been working on, which I guess would just be your Jeep Wagoneer.
No, I got some electronics projects I've been working on too.
Cool. Yeah. And then I've been slowly cleaning out the shop and moving it, stuff to my new house. So I guess I could talk about that a little bit. And then finally, I ordered some PCBs from Oshpark on Friday. But then I didn't realize that you guys kind of did the Oshpark thing where, you know, Oshpark puts everybody's orders into one big panel.
And you're talking about us in terms of MacroFab, right?
Yeah. Because I was talking to you about something, then you're like, oh, we can't do a V-groove. And then you're like, well, that's because you have to do that across the entire board. And we panelize multiple orders into one board, which I didn't realize that you did. So maybe we could talk about that some more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So yeah, let's get started. All right. So the first topic is how there are way too many games coming out this fall. Like,
there's just too many games in general.
Yeah. There's like Tomb Raider, Spider-Man.
I completely forgot about Tomb Raider.
That comes out like next week, I think.
What?
Yeah, it comes out very soon. I think it comes out. It comes out in September. Like, it and Spider-Man are releasing around the same time.
Shadow of Tomb Raider.
Yeah, I saw. I've been seeing a lot of ads for it on YouTube, and I don't know. It seems kind of generic. You know, she's like, "What have I done? This ends now." You know, all the generic lines.
Oh yeah. It's the trilogy. It's like the third game in the series now.
Yeah. I played the last two. I liked them. I think I still like the first one or the first new one the best.
Yeah, the first new one is like amazingly good. Mainly because all the shit you get into as a character, like the River of Blood and all that stuff. And they don't try to like make you do a lot of side mission stuff. It just happens to be there. Which is
yeah,
nice.
In the second game,
there's no River of Blood, and then they have that like hub world thing, which kind of changes how the game plays.
They try to make it kind of not really open world, but quasi open world, which kind of bothers me. It's like either be open world or just be linear. Like a lot of times, I'd much rather it just be linear.
Yeah, if I recall the original game or the original remake, reboot or whatever of the game, it did have a hub area that was like the shipyard thing with all your friends who were staying at, but there wasn't really much to do there. And it seemed to be kind of like a thing you just return to just to kind of reset the game.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, yeah, September.
But the second one was really good. I really enjoyed it. So I'm probably going to pick up the third one.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see what else is coming out.
Mainly because, like, there's... I like how, like, all the different ways you can die in the game. Like, you brutally die. It's almost like Dark Souls-esque.
Or Dead Space was really good at that.
Yeah. Where stuff would just stab you and, like, rip you apart and stuff.
Okay, here's an updated page that has, because it has Battlefield 5 in November now. So, yeah, so September, we've got... okay, Tomb Raider is the 14th of this month. And what else do we have? So that Spider-Man game comes out. That comes out this week. All right. Yeah,
I saw an ad for that.
Yeah, so basically it's like Arkham Spider City or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who's going to play all these games? And then...
Well, it's better to have more games than not enough games.
Why couldn't some of them have released in the summer? You know, like, give it some breathing room. It's like how Hollywood tries to release every movie in May, and then August is empty.
Well, what games came out in summer? There was...
Octopath Traveler did, right?
Octopath Traveler came out, yeah.
Madden, of course. Not much in July. Oh, was Octopath
there were some indie games
May?
Like
Detroit Become Human, whatever that was. Didn't Chris play that?
I don't know. I was watching some people stream that game. It looks interesting. It looks a lot like what was that game? Heavy Rain.
Is it a Quantic Dream game? That's
is it Heavy Rain, the one that you just
Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls.
Yeah, it's kind of like that, at least gameplay-wise. You kind of just, like, make decisions and stuff like that. There's not a lot of, like, action stuff.
So I guess the big news is that Battlefield 5 moved from October to November because it was right between Black Ops 4 and the real killer, which is going to be Red Dead 2.
Only if Red Dead 2 is on PC, and I don't think it is.
Nope.
So I'm not going to play that game.
Rockstar hates PC gamers at launch.
Yeah, I didn't even get to play the first one. Even though I think I would really enjoy it,
I don't know if the first one ever even came to PC. Let me check. Red Dead Redemption.
Not.
I mean, Grand Theft Auto did. Well, think about it. I mean, Red Dead was huge. And then, you know, Red Dead Redemption 2 is, you know, effectively a follow-up to Grand Theft Auto 5, which is the top-selling game of all time now. So it's a it's a pretty big deal. Oh, Super Mario Party. Are you going to get that for your Switch?
Probably not.
Oh, there's another Assassin's Creed coming out. Odyssey? Is that the Roman one? I can't even keep track anymore. Or
is
it
Greek?
Who cares
about that game series anymore?
I'm going to figure out where this Assassin's Creed Odyssey takes place. Yep, it's like a Greek thing, of course.
You gotta find more gods to kill. Oh no, that's a God of War.
That's God of War. let's see. Yep. I guess people still play that. Like, what was the last one? Assassin's Creed Origins?
When are they going to have an Assassin's Creed Caveman Edition? Neanderthal.
Assassin's Creed Primal.
Yeah, like
Far Cry.
Far Cry game.
Did you play Far Cry 5 or whatever? Was that the one that came out this year?
So I played in the Far Cry series. I played the original Far Cry. That's Far Cry 1. Oh my god, how long ago was that?
That was 2004. I remember buying it. It was like on 8 discs.
Yeah, 8 discs on CD. And played that, and I never played any of the other ones until Far Cry Blood Dragon came out. So I didn't play, like, I think it was Far Cry 3 was what Blood Dragon was based off of.
Yes.
And I didn't play 3, I just played Blood Dragon because I got it with my video card.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun. And so I started playing Far Cry 3, and I hated it.
I tried playing Blood Dragon and I couldn't get into it, but I did play through Far Cry 4 the one in the Himalayas.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty good. It's just Far Cry.
It's got that stereotypical open world thing, and that stuff's just not interested in me.
It seems like all the Ubisoft games are kind of like that. It's like a big open world, and you go around doing quests, and you follow markers, and you climb towers. But it seems to be working for them.
Yeah, that's why I know it was your favorite game last year, but like H1, what was it?
Horizon Zero Dawn.
HZD. And I was watching it, and I'm like, oh, this just looks like Far Cry, except in Colorado.
It did really feel like Far Cry. When I first started playing, I'm like, oh, it's Far Cry with a bow and arrow, but not Far Cry Primal. Yeah. I would say, I don't want to say it's a negative, but it was very Far Cry. Also, the inventory system was very labyrinthian. That happens in Far Cry as well. We're like, oh, if I want to make a larger pouch for bullets, I have to kill 3 deer. Now if I want to make a bigger one, I have to kill 3 mice. There's all those like just completely random animals you have to kill. And so that part of Horizon Zero Dawn was exactly like Far Cry 4. So I think they try to justify the open world by giving you all these tasks that make you run around in it. Like, oh, you can hunt animals? Okay, so let's force you to hunt animals by tying your pouch upgrades to however many skins you get.
Yeah.
So that's kind of wanky.
It just gets tiring after a while. The same thing happened with the game Dragon Age or Inquisition, which is the third game of that series.
Mm-hmm.
They made it more open world. And it was really well done in terms of like the world's feeling alive and stuff happening and stuff and stuff like that. But they had to like justify the open world, except just instead of just leaving it being there for you to explore. They're like, oh, yeah, now we're going to have fetch quests and you have to kill X amount of things. And it's just like, no, don't do this.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's exactly what it's like with Far Cry or Horizon Zero Dawn, where you're trying to make, like, pouches. Wasn't Dragon's Age Inquisition, that was one that, like, people kind of didn't like, right?
No, that was Dragon Age 2.
Oh. Okay, so in November, there's another Hitman game. Fallout 76, do we even know exactly what that's going to be yet?
Yeah, they've given a lot more information about it. I'm not going to get that game unless someone comes out with a mod that completely turns off the multiplayer aspect. That sounds like that's what that game is going to be. Like, the only way for you to, like, interact with the world is mostly through other NPCs. It sounds a lot like Destiny, except in Fallout.
You know? I was just going to say that. Because you have Anthem as well. So, you know, Destiny was big. You know what, 3 years ago. So now we're seeing all of the Me Too games, you know? So yeah, you've got Anthem. And then, as you mentioned, probably Fallout, but the thing that happens, and I think that's the problem that Anthem might have is by the time they complete their knockoff game, the original is already done. Like, isn't Destiny kind of done now?
Well, they have a Destiny 2. I don't know if they're making a third one though.
I don't think Destiny 2 was as well received, or like it wasn't improved enough or something. I know people had problems with it, and it has not.
It was pretty much.
It's player base. It was
pretty much just the first one.
Yeah, its player base has not had as good retention as the first one did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I either want to play like an online shooter or a linear game. Like, I don't like these quasi open world games like a God of War, the new one that was allegedly the best game ever made. It was like that, too. There's like a hub world and they want you to explore. It's like, no, I just want to go on the main mission, you know? I just want to, like, rip off heads of gods and, instead of like, oh, should I?
Down their throats.
Right, and then, like, when you finish that game, there's still this lake that you can keep exploring. There's, like, tons of side quests I haven't done, but I'm like, I don't really want to do them, you know? It's like, I wanted to do the main game and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what the payoff in games are, is, like, the story. And
yeah,
that was actually what the good thing with Fallout 3 was, actually all previous Fallout games as well, was the side quests were their own stories. And that's what made you want to do the side quests. And then Fallout 4 happened, and now the side quests are complete garbage.
Well, I would say if you have something like a quasi-open world game like the new God of War or, what was it, Rise of the Tomb Raider?
Yeah.
In those games, it feels like the side missions are forced. Like, you feel like you should do them to get your money's worth because that content is there. Whereas in the Bethesda games, it's like you're going to do something and then you're distracted organically by the side missions and you want to explore them. Like, oh, what's that thing up in the sky? I'm going to go look at that. Or what's this cave? You know, and then you emerge like 3 hours later. So it feels more – the way you're drawn into those sub-stories feel more organic in the Bethesda open world games as opposed to
things. Oh, yeah.
Like
instead
God
of just being an NPC there that you need to talk to and because they have a quest indicator.
Right. So like if I've loaded up my God of War save – you know, it would have Kratos and his son on that big lake, which is like the hub world of that game. And then there's all these markers for like subquests. It's like, oh, meet this person here to explore this castle. And it's like, if I have to like, you know, actively walk toward that location to get to a marker to do something, that's not really very interesting to me. But again, if I'm walking down the road in Fallout and I see a weird broken statue on the horizon, I'm going to walk toward it.
Yep.
So... yeah, that's.
And I think that's
what, that's the kind of stuff I like.
And I think that's the big difference between Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 is Fallout 3 had a lot of that, whereas in Fallout 4 you go explore something and there's nothing there.
Yeah, Fallout 4 definitely lacked the depth that 3 had.
I mean, there's only like one mission I recall in Fallout 4.
Was it
60 hours of gameplay?
Was it the Silver Shroud?
I don't want to know what the Silver Shroud is.
You didn't do that mission?
I don't recall. I didn't finish the game. I didn't.
The most
memorable. The only one that I remember is the pirate robot pirate ship.
Okay. Well, there's another mission called Silver Shroud. So, like in the past, before the bombs, there was like this kind of like. What we consider like a 1930s serial radio star.
Yeah, it was like a radio TV show, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you know how they have like the guy and his ghoulish manservant. But anyway, one of them was the Silver Shroud. So what you do is you go to the Silver Shroud Museum and you get the outfit from like the television show. And then you go around acting like you're the Silver Shroud. And then the main character like changes their voice as well. You know, they talk very, you know. They talk like someone from the 1930s. They're like, behold, I am the Silver Shroud. And then you do a bunch of like speech checks to convince people that you actually are the Silver Shroud. And it's pretty memorable because it's kind of crazy.
See, that sounds like the good old Fallout.
Yes.
Because Fallout 3 had tons of stuff like that. Whereas Fallout 4 was just kind of lame.
Right, it was not nearly as memorable. I mean, I still remember pretty much everything from Fallout 3, but Fallout 4, Silver Shroud, and I guess, yes, you had the robots on the ship, which, again, I think if you had played the Silver Shroud, you know, the robots aren't as memorable as the Silver Shroud was.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay, so a few more games here. So there's and Battlefield 5, which I think we'll talk about separately after this. And also, there's another Darksiders in November. And then in December, there's only three games. Just Cause 4 and then Super Smash Brothers.
Oh, yeah. I'll be picking up Super Smash, though. I like that game series.
There's a lot of games. I mean, do you think that why we see so many open world games is like there's a lot of kids or young people out there that only buy like one or two games a year. And the fact that they can like go around collecting trinkets for 100 hours... seems valuable to them.
I think it's because it's a easy way to make a game.
Open world is easy?
In comparison, because if you need, let's say you need, because people want to play a game for X hours.
Okay.
Right? They want to get their money's worth out of a game. And so what's the easiest way to do that? It's not to make a really long, linear story game, because that's going to cost way too much money in like voice acting and modeling and
cinematics, really cinematics expensive.
All that stuff, whereas we can just make an open world that just has you kill things
and there's like things scattered around the world and you can find them.
Yeah, it's a lot easier and cheaper.
Yeah, don't know if it's, I can't imagine it's both easier and cheaper, but there's some, well, there's gotta also, be some reason.
It's probably easier to make. It's probably cheaper in terms of resource creation than, because I would imagine a 3D modeler designing a building is cheaper than getting a voice actor.
Well, I mean, if we look at it this way, if you think about like 10 or 15 years ago, open world games were pretty rare. And nowadays, linear games are rare, you know, because everything mm-hmm. is open world. So, yeah, I mean, it must be affordable if so many studios are doing it. Or there must be a reason. I mean, I can't say for certain what it would be. But because, you know, like you have God of War coming out, which is, you know, fairly linear, and everyone's like, oh, linear games aren't dead, blah, 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 even though the game is really overrated. So the fact that wasn't just a true open world game, whereas like everything Ubisoft releases is, and, you know, pretty much everything is. Yeah.
Oh, there's a new Valkyrie Chronicles coming out soon. That's going to be good.
Yeah. Just
there's a ton of games coming out.
Yep. But Red Dead's going to make all the money.
Probably.
I hope it's not just
my money, though.
The one thing there's so much dialogue and crap in video games nowadays. Like Red Dead, of course I played through the first one, but you spend all your time like, hey, let's go to the farm and fight bandits. And then the whole time you're like riding there on a horse, and then the character's like blah, 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 talking the whole way. Grand Theft Auto is the same way, except for you're in a car.
And yes.
Just seems like there's so many games where the developers just want to write dialogue for the characters and then have them walk around so there's time to hear the dialogue. Like Uncharted 4 was really bad for that. It was like a climbing simulator that had a bunch of dialogue in it.
Hmm. I kind of like that, though. That's one of my favorite things with the Dragon Age series is when you walk around on missions and stuff, your characters will banter and talk about what's going on in the world and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad somebody likes it. I don't know. I just...
As long as it's interesting, it's not like... I know the Grand Theft Auto one is a really good comparison, because the Grand Theft Auto one, it's like, I don't give a shit about what they're talking about.
Yeah, I've
Whereas
kind of...
in the Dragon Age, it matters to the world. It gives you more lore and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, what games are you going to buy this fall from this list, Parker?
So I am going to pick up the Tomb Raider game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pick up it's actually this month as well. The Valkyrie Chronicles 4 game. I'm going to pick that up. I'm going to pick up. Oh man, what was the other one? Doesn't Doom, the next Doom, come out?
No, I think that's further in the future.
Okay.
Like Cyberpunk, I think that's actually next year.
That's 2 years away.
Cyberpunk is?
Yep.
You know, everyone was like gushing about the trailer for that, but it's not going to look like that. None of the games ever do. I mean, how quickly people forget Watch Dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the big one, Bioshock Infinite. That game was totally misrepresented ahead of launch.
Yeah.
I find it weird that, like, Aliens Colonial Marines gets dragged through the mud, but, like, Bioshock Infinite completely changed while it was being made. It was completely watered down, and it gets a pass. Like, you're shooting
the funny thing with
ghosts
that,
with guns?
You know, the funny thing about Aliens Colonial Marines is I didn't watch any of the trailers. It just popped up in Steam being out, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that looks cool. I picked it up, and I basically finished it. Like, I did not leave my computer for like 14 hours. And I finished
Holy
that
crap.
Game. And that game is, I love that game. And I look at all the reviews, and people are like shitting all over it. And I look at the trailer that they had. And I'm like, okay, it looks better in the trailer, but it doesn't look that much worse in the game. And yeah, I was just like.
Did you play through Bioshock Infinite?
Yeah, I beat that game.
And do you remember,
well,
like,
I don't remember the trailers, though. I didn't watch the trailers.
Go back and look at, like, the E3 2010 video of it, and it's completely different. It's basically a bunch of cinematic BS that wasn't even remotely in the game.
Bioshock Infinite was a very interesting game.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it, but it could have been so much better.
Could have, yeah.
I mean, compared to, it like, wasn't, you know, like, people said that BioShock was a dumbed-down version of System Shock, but Infinite was a dumbed-down version of BioShock. You know, like, you know,
that's true.
BioShock, you had all those different guns, and they were so cool, and they had different ammo types, and then BioShock Infinite is just like rifle, machine gun, pistol.
Yep. But you can use, like magic at the same time.
You mean plasmids?
Well, they didn't call them plasmids in
Those didn't Infinite. Seem that useful in Infinite.
No, they were not.
Yeah. Well, at least they kept the robotic George Washingtons.
Yeah. The Oh yeah, there's that Bloodstained game comes out.
Oh, does that finally come out this fall?
It should be.
I played through what was it? Bloodstained
Curse of the Moon.
Yes, I played through that in June. Right, yeah, before I moved. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, I really enjoyed that. So I'd actually rather just have a whole game of that than the new one. Because all of those 2D, 3D games, they all look the same.
They do, they do. Whereas this, it basically looks like Castlevania 1/2 on the NES.
Yeah. And if you notice it, like, well, it was more like Castlevania 3, but they kind of improved some of the ways that the characters work. Like, there was more reason to use the different characters, you know, and then you can switch from all four if you wanted instead of just two. So, yeah.
And then how their special abilities and stuff changed, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it was pretty difficult. Well, the last stage, the difficulty ramped up big time in the last stage. That was a pretty sharp increase, I thought. Like, I pretty much breezed through the whole thing, but the last stage took me, like, a number of attempts.
Yeah, that last boss was pretty brutal.
Oh, yeah. So, speaking of games... Oh, yeah, I guess I could talk about... God, I don't even know what... I mean, I'll buy Red Dead. I'll buy Battlefield 5. So, are you going to buy Battlefield 5? I guess, which leads into our next topic.
I am not buying... This will be the first Battlefield I will not be buying.
Really? Okay, well...
Yeah.
Like, and everybody
on... Because... It is not because the trailer.
Right. But...
I don't give a shit if there's a woman in it or not.
Okay. So do you want to just jump into that then, Battlefield 5, since that is a pretty big break for you?
Yeah,
okay, so yeah, everyone on YouTube is like saying, oh, Battlefield 5 is going to fail, and YouTube is, they are saying it's because of that. But maybe what we should talk about is if it's underperforming, why it is, because like clearly you have a different opinion from a lot of these people. And I'm still going to buy it, but I can't say I'm excited about it. So, so you've been playing since 1942, right?
Yeah, so that's 2002. So I've been playing Battlefield games since then. I haven't played Vietnam, which people conveniently forget about.
The original Battlefield Vietnam?
Yeah, the original Battlefield Vietnam.
Not Bad Company Vietnam?
Not Bad Company. I played that one as well. That one was fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We all played that one. So we all bought Battlefield 1, but then only Mike and I continued to play. Like you and Jones didn't play it.
Yeah, that it just was a meat grinder. It just wasn't like the guns that were not fun to use. The tanks were not fun to use. Running around on the field was not fun anymore because it's just like, oh, it's like there's no like strategic cover really anymore. I guess that's kind of on purpose because, like, once you get out of the trenches, it's just a meat grinder.
Right.
But it's just not, nothing about that game was fun like the previous games.
But you didn't play it for very long, did you?
I played it for, I mean, I can check Origin and see how many hours I have in it, but I have quite a bit of hours into it.
So the thing that I found with that game is that when I first started playing it, I didn't like it because I was getting my ass kicked the whole time. But then once you get some better guns and you're able to play better, I found it to be more fun.
So I have all the guns unlocked.
Oh, okay. So you did. Yeah. All right.
So it's just the guns are just not fun to use, mainly because there's that stupid They use that
random bullet random deviation. Bullet.
Yeah, and it's just like, that does not make the game fun anymore.
Yeah, yeah. So the thing, actually, one thing I liked about the game, I liked how the guns looked.
Oh, yeah, they look great. The sound design's amazing, how the game looks, how the aesthetics is. That's all great. I'm not going to complain about that. But how it plays is utter garbage. I was like, I went back to playing Counter-Strike instead.
So, what was it? A couple weeks ago, we were playing with Toscan Eck, and they were like, hey, you should reinstall Battlefield 3. So I installed Battlefield 3 back in, and I think I've had bad company. I always have bad company too on my computer, because who cares? It's only like 8 gigs. But yeah, I noticed Battlefield 3 and Bad Company 2, like if you have like an M416, like a machine gun, right? And if you see a guy in the distance and you aim at the person and you keep steady and you burst fire, like brap, 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 you can take them out.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in Battlefield 1, they put so much detail into all the guns. I mean, it's just really impressive, like the reload animations, how they're different for every gun depending on the clips and everything, which is like stupidly detailed. I mean, you look back like Bad Company 2. One thing that always bugged me about that game is if you had your pistol and you reloaded it before the pistol was empty, the character would recock the action.
Yep.
Which you don't have to do on a pistol. So they went from like that level of inaccuracy to Battlefield 1, which is like stupidly detailed. Like, it's like, I don't know, you probably didn't play it enough, but there was a semi-automatic modification for the the 1906 Springfield sniper rifle.
Okay.
And so it's detailed to the point where if you've got the semi-auto experimental 1906 sniper rifle, you're sitting there shooting, like, I don't know, 9mm ammo. But then if you also have the K bullets equipped for anti-tank, when you switch to K bullets, they animate the whole thing where the character takes apart the bolt and then puts in the new bolt so it turns it back into the original rifle so they can fire the steel K bullet. And then if you switch back to your normal fire mode, they take apart that bolt and they put the – it looks like, you know, they animated someone putting a gun together. Just for one type of ammo in one type of sniper rifle that sucks, that nobody even uses. But then, yes, all that insane cool detail, but then, yeah, you have random bullet deviation.
Yeah, that's what gets me the most is, you know, I never really complain when I get my ass kicked in video games, because most of the time it's because I am bad. But in Battlefield 5, it feels like the game is playing against you.
You mean Battlefield 1.
Battlefield 1, yeah. Battlefield 1 plays against you. It's technically the fifth game.
Yeah, I think what happens in that case is, guns, basically the guns only work in the way they're meant to. I guess that's kind of a stupid thing, but it's like, okay, yeah, this, you know, you're submachine gun, which nobody would have. Well, there's some historical inaccuracy for you. Nobody would have used a submachine
gun. Who cares
about
that, though?
Right. Submachine gun won't work past, like, you know, 30 yards, and a sniper rifle is useless up close. And yeah, but like in the older games, I can't remember if it was like that in 4, but definitely in Bad Company 2 and Battlefield 3, if you took your time, you could hit, like, well, you know how much we used to play Battlefield 2 or Bad Company 2, like, I would routinely kill snipers across the map with my 416. Like, if you're good at it and you burst fire, like, yeah, I always do, like, well, shit, I was just playing a couple nights ago. It's like, bap, 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 like 5 to 6 shots and you can take someone out. So it's more about your skill rather than rock, paper, scissors. You've got the wrong gun at the wrong range and the other guy's got the more proper gun for this range and you lose.
Yes. I do not like that at all.
And that's the main thing you didn't like about Battlefield 1?
That's the main thing, yeah. It's just the game, the gunplay is just not fun anymore. It's amazing where they went from Battlefield 4, which actually had a lot of fun, like, gun gameplay, to Battlefield 1, which was complete garbage.
I wonder why they changed it.
I don't know. But
maybe they changed it.
I don't like Battlefield 1 or was it Battlefield 5? Because a lot of people are complaining about historical inaccuracy.
You don't like the game you haven't played.
Well, I'm not going to buy it. But it's not because of the reasons people are saying. Because my example is in Battlefield 1, to revive someone, you just inject them with a syringe. It's like, that wouldn't actually make someone alive again, but it works in a video game. So, I mean, I don't complain about that.
Also in Battlefield 1, everyone would have been using bolt-action rifles.
Correct.
Well, hell, most armies in World War II used bolt-action rifles.
Yes.
Or, the Americans probably had, the M1 Garand was probably, one of the most fastest-firing weapons in World War II, at least that a normal soldier would carry. Okay, so basically Battlefield 1 soured you against Battlefield 5.
Yes, because I know it's going to be exactly the same, except World War II-ish.
Not that they said that they changed the guns back to the way they were. That's what they said.
Really?
Yeah. See, my main issue with it is it doesn't seem different enough from Battlefield 1. I mean, you're still in Europe, and since Battlefield 1 had so many futuristic guns, so to speak, I mean, a lot of those same guns were used in World War II, so the guns aren't going to be that much different. And the location isn't that much different. And also, you can sandbag and build bases like Fortnite.
I mean, oh, I didn't hear about that. That makes me even less likely to want to like it.
Yeah, basically, you can rebuild things. So, if a window gets blown out in a house, you can board it up. If you have a sandbank,
that's kinda cool.
If you have a sandbank embedment and it gets destroyed, you can hold a key to rebuild it.
Okay, that makes sense. When you said Fortnite, I'm imagining people building ginormous structures.
No, I don't think it's like that, but I'm sure it's inspired by that.
Probably.
Yeah. So I don't know.
I'm okay with that.
Well, there's an open beta this week. You could try it out, see if you like it.
Yeah, I'll try it out, but no promises.
Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting how they handle the customization of characters, mainly because the big difference between when you're playing the game, you need to be able to identify if the person's an enemy quickly.
Yes. Also, what type of enemy?
I don't know if what type of enemy? Which all previous Battlefield games, a anti-tank character always looked like an anti-tank character.
Yep.
And so it was really easy to determine if that person was a threat or not. I'm worried that with the customization that they're adding, that will go out the window.
So here's the thing, how there's a big stink about Battlefront 2 having so many microtransactions? Before that, they were like, hey, Battlefront 2 is not going to have a season or premium pass. So the first time since, Battlefield 3, 4, they all have had premium passes, remember? Yep. Basically buy the game twice to get all the maps. But then Battlefront 2 is like, hey, we're not going to have a premium pass. And everyone on the internet was like, oh, this is great. This is great. This is great. But then they didn't stop to think, what are they going to replace that with?
Yeah.
And the answer was tons of loot boxes and DLC. So now Battlefield 5 is also not going to have a premium pass. And everyone's like, oh, that's great. That's great. That's great. And the question is, what are they going to replace that with? They can't do loot boxes because of the Battlefront conspiracy. So it's going to be rampant customization of characters a la Fortnite. And that's why you have... Yep, and that's why you have hook arms and katanas and war paint. It's because of all the shit they're going to sell you. But then, yeah, as far as the game goes, that could be confusing because a big thing in game design is not even necessarily what the character looks like, but what their silhouette looks like. By the shape of the character, Left 4 Dead, let's use Left 4 Dead as an example. The tank is shaped like a triangle. The smoker is skinny. The witch is small. Even at a distance, you can tell what they are.
Yes, yeah.
And one thing I thought Battlefield 1 did really well is, yes, it had very distinct character silhouettes. The support guy always had a trench coat. The medic had crutches on his back. And everybody had something that would affect their silhouette so you could tell what character class they were at a distance. So not just if they were an enemy, but if they were, you know, oh, that's a sniper, he's got such and such. Or like, you know, in a lot of the games, the snipers have ghillie suits, so they look like fuzzy people at a distance. And you're right, rampant customization could erase all of that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it's handled.
Well, again, if they're getting rid of the premium membership, I'm not sure how many people actually got that, but you know, they're going to be like, hey, if we're going to lose this much income by not having premium, we need to make up that much income with cosmetics. And so
it sounds like premium was the least evil out of it.
Well, I mean, Fortnite, which everyone like just spends all their time like worshiping, that's free, but they make all their money off character customizations, and that's why it looks like a furry convention instead of like a military battle.
Well, the thing about Fortnite though is your character, there's no character classes, and so it doesn't really matter what your character looks like. It's just all characters are bad or against you in that game.
Right.
Like PUBG is the same way. There's no character classes, so it doesn't really matter what your characters actually look like.
Right, and then in PUBG, again, it's, well, the game costs money, but then inside of the game, there's a whole ecosystem around what your character looks like. That's why they make those games third person. It's not to make the gameplay better. It's so you can see the character you spent money on.
Yes.
Yeah.
So is Battlefield 5 going to be third person?
I bet you the Battle Royale version will have a third-person view, and then everyone will be bitching about it because they're like, ah, oh, not my Battlefield, first person all the way, which, you know. But the thing is, yeah, it's like, you know, you want to see, oh, look, you know, I paid $100 for that rare miniskirt. I want to see it on my character.
Sure.
Yeah, because, I mean, honestly, they like...
They should just put strategically placed mirrors all over the map.
So you can admire yourself and get scared and actually shoot. Room.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, you know that new NVIDIA card, like the 280 RTX or whatever?
Oh, yeah, RTX.
That has ray tracing. I was watching like a Westy video or Digital Foundry, and if you go up to a piece of glass in that game, your character, you can see your character in it.
That's cool.
So there you go.
We solved the crisis of third person in Battlefield.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest problem with Battlefield 5 is that it's not Bad Company 3.
Yeah, I agree. I would totally buy a Bad Company game.
Yeah, see, you wouldn't care about anything else if it's not Bad Company 3.
I wouldn't care about anything else, but it's Bad Company.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would. It's like... Yeah. If your consumers are screaming, give us Bad Company 3, then maybe make Bad Company 3? Huh?
Yeah.
Maybe. I think if Battlefield 5 does underperform, I think then maybe we'll get that. They'll be like, maybe we should make what people want.
Maybe.
Because Battlefield 1 was a breath of fresh air, you know, with the setting. It's a setting you hadn't seen before. We'd have so many, like, you know, modern or near future shooters, and all of a sudden you have like all these greasy tanks and greasy guns and horses. But then,
you know, I actually really liked the single player for Battlefield 1.
Yeah, it was
the
fun.
Campaign. It was a lot of fun. It was definitely it was different. It was a fresh breath air for a military style shooter. And I really enjoyed it. And then I got to the multiplayer and I'm like, oh yeah, these guns suck.
Yeah. Maybe I was too busy enjoying the animations of the guns to worry about the hitboxes, but yes. I played a lot of medic in that game. I liked all the semi-auto medic rifles that nobody would have been using actually in World War I.
Yeah.
So, all right, cool. Well, there are our thoughts on Battlefield 1 and Battlefield 5. I suppose, what, probably our December podcast, we can talk about it, because I'll at least have bought it.
So I'm going through my because we're still on games before we move on. I'm going through these are games that have already come out and I've actually purchased but have not played yet that I need to get to. Prey, that came out last year.
Oh, yeah.
I bought it. I have not, I haven't even installed it yet. It's just sitting in my library. And I'm like, I really want to play that game because everything about that game checks off every single box for me.
It's basically BioShock in space.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds awesome.
What's next?
Oh, let's see. There is, oh man, I have Sleeping Dogs in here. I haven't even played that. That's an open world game, so I'll probably never enjoy it. Sniper Elite Nazi Zombie Army.
Oh, I mean, you were talking about that last year, weren't you?
Yeah. So, I think we was talking about it in the same kind of context as like games we haven't played yet but own.
Is Sniper Elite that game that shows you like an X-ray of what your bullet does when you kill people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The zombie one is just like the same game, but with like zombies in it.
But with zombies, yep.
Yeah. You like try to escape from Berlin because Hitler has like a Nazi army now.
Of zombies.
Of zombies, yeah. So yeah, that's a short list. There's probably more in here, but I have to go through the list.
Very cool. Yeah, gosh. It's like, some of these games I would like to play. Like, I actually would probably like to play Spider-Man, but I know I'm not going to. Maybe I'll wait for the reviews. But yeah. You know, it's just going to be another open world game. Like, oh, Spider-Man, you have to collect all the crimes in New York. And yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going. It's going to be Arkham Asylum, except with Spider-Man
in New York.
In New York.
What about Fallout 76?
I'm probably not going to get that game.
You know Chris is going to buy it.
Yeah, I know he is, but it's one of those... I play Fallout games for the story.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even finish 4 because the story sucked.
Yeah, and it looks like whatever it is, it's featuring heavy on base building mechanics.
Yeah, which is like the absolute thing I hate the worst about Fallout 4.
Yeah, or just the fact that you have to go around babysitting them. And then if you're talking about like a shooter, Fallout 4 improved upon Fallout 3, but it's still not really that good of an engine for that.
That's true. I never really had a problem in Fallout 3 with shooting guns and stuff.
Right, but think about if you take that into a competitive environment... It's going to be...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the same thing. Like, you know, one more thing about games. You know how everybody's going Battle Royale now? And as soon as, like, a AAA game makes a good Battle Royale, like something... Well, that already happened with Fortnite, but I think PUBG is going to die pretty quickly.
And so got a lot of people playing it, though.
Yeah, but it's going down. It's yelling timber. I mean, like, if there was a game... Well, I know you're just complaining about Battlefield, but if there was a game as technically adept as Battlefield, and it was like PUBG, I mean, why would you play PUBG?
That's true, yeah.
Cool. All right, so should we move on to projects?
Sure.
All right, so...
What have you been up to, Ben?
Oh, yeah, okay, so I've been working on new accessibility controllers for Xbox One. I redesigned a lot of that stuff, and also... I sent off a board for a new controller monitor for video game development, which is like super badass. That's cool. That's the thing I was talking about, maybe having new stuff at Macrofab, even though I'm just going to use Osh Park for the protos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so like the production you want us to do.
Yeah, I guess it depends. Like the board seems really complicated, but maybe it's just the traces that are complicated. Like, I mean, because I took it into Macrofab and I was looking at it like for part placement, and I'm like, well, when I look at it here, there's not actually that many parts on it. It's just the way in which the interconnect is very convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
I need to like start making 4-layer boards, I think, is the issue. Well, the problem with that board was the idea is the board could, if you took two monitors and stacked them on top of each other, this thing is like
thin enough vertically that you could fit it between the two monitors, and it would just sit on the bezels and not obscure the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'll probably be putting that together probably mid-September. I'm going to a manufacturing convention in September with the Maker Gear guys. So that's going to consume all next week for me. So can't stuff any boards that week.
Lame.
So what are you working on?
So I've got some PCBs and stuff I've been working on. But the main thing I'm kind of excited about that I've been experimenting with all weekend is signal-defined radios, which is basically a USB dongle that you plug into your computer, and it allows you to look at radio signals from a certain spectrum.
Oh.
And so the one I have, I can look at 500 kilohertz to 1.7 gigahertz, which is quite a big range.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So you can listen to AM broadcasts or almost FM. Like wireless. Yeah, definitely FM.
Yeah, I can listen to a lot of ham radio stuff. It's pretty interesting.
So
I've been playing around with the software on Windows, and I started playing around with the Linux stuff last night.
So question. So I've heard of software-defined radio, but you said this is signal-defined radio. What is the difference?
It's software. Oh, I misspoke. It's software-defined.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wait. You're doing it in Linux as well?
Yeah, yeah. I've been playing with the Linux commands, mainly because you can script stuff. And so instead of having to play with a GUI, you just kind of like say, I want to listen to this signal through the command line, and it does it. Because the idea is...
Oh, so you just have a script that sets up everything for you?
Yes.
Got it.
And so what I want to do is make a radio for the wagon, which is the other Jeep.
Yep.
And basically use a Raspberry Pi signal-defined radio. I can use a 4G modem, USB modem. Basically, it makes it a lot easier to put a system together, and it can do a lot of stuff. It can listen to pretty much any radio frequency that people are talking over. You can scan, police scanners, fire department scanners, all that stuff.
Why do you need a modem for it to work?
Oh, the modem. So then you just have internet on it, so you can
listen
to more stuff. So you can listen to like Pandora or YouTube and stuff. But the idea will be, instead of, because there's a project out there that already does all this, but it uses a touchscreen interface, and I hate touchscreen interfaces in cars.
You want to build this into like a double DIN or a DIN?
It'd be a single DIN setup and have physical buttons for everything.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a fun project.
Oh, you're.
And I did the proof of concept pretty much last night, and it all works.
Oh, so your car definitely wouldn't have a CAN bus, would it?
No, it does not have a CAN bus.
Oh. Otherwise, you could hook that up, too.
Yeah. Except the wagon has zero computers in it. So.
How can it have zero computers?
It's got a carburetor that's vacuum controlled.
Oh, my gosh. Well, didn't you say the design of that car is a lot older than its release year?
Yeah, the first wagon came out in like 67 or 73, something like that.
That's insane. When was CAN bus was like updated, right? For cars?
Yeah, around there.
Does your Wrangler have a CAN bus?
The Wrangler does not have a CAN bus.
Hmm.
It does have ODB, because in 96 is when the US government required ODB2 to be on vehicles. And so they actually took a Chrysler stopped making the Jeep for like half a year to make it ODB2 compliant.
What is ODB?
Onboard diagnostics. It's like it's a port that you plug in to like read your codes and stuff.
Yep. And it was standardized at that time. Because it existed before, but it varied by car.
Yeah, it varied by car. So ODB2 was a standard that they implemented. There was an ODB1 as well, but not a lot of cars had it. ODB2 was the first time that there was a sweeping like standard across almost all cars.
I wanted to have a
audio in jack on my car. But then for some reason, since the radio is hooked up to the CAN bus, you can't just hook in an external source. You have to kind of tell it that it's there, which is lame.
Yeah. Yeah, that's usually how that kind of stuff works.
And that's like a 12-year-old car. Like nowadays, cars are like so stupidly computerized, it's ridiculous. I guess it's cheap, all that stuff.
Yeah, and it's easier. It's funny as it makes it more expensive in terms of the parts you have to buy to fix something, but it's easier to find out what's wrong. Because now since anything in your car is a smart thing, it can know, oh, this thing is broken. This one specific thing is broken.
Including all four tires, which are that's another thing. Oh, yeah. What was it? Was it the Ford Explorer rollovers? That's what caused it, right?
Like, what you mean? The pressure sensors and all the...
Yeah, every tires? Car now, every car, no matter how cheap, has a tire pressure sensor in all four wheels.
That is not from the Ford Exploder from what?
I thought it was like early people 2000s? Like... No, like remember... No, it was more recent than the early 2000s. Like it was some like Ford SUV and people weren't inflating the tires to the proper level because they're like, oh... I don't think I have to inflate it to that level. And so it was causing a bunch of rollovers, and then they started requiring, cars to basically complain if the pressure wasn't correct.
The US government put in you had to have tire pressure monitors only because of fuel consumption.
Oh, that really?
That was the primary driving force. Yes. Yeah. And you don't have to actually have sensors in the tires. I think VW on their cheaper models, they actually just look at the speed sensors of the tires, and if one tire is lower than the other one in pressure, it's smaller in diameter, and so it spins faster.
Oh, that makes sense.
So yeah, so you don't have to actually have sensors in it. But yeah, well, you just have to notify if it's within like 10% of the pressure or something like that.
Well, interesting. I can't remember what the actual law is. Well, that could fluctuate with the weather too.
Yes.
The external temperature.
And that happens all the time on like Jeeps because you have a lot bigger tires. And so there's more air to fluctuate in there. And so you will, one day you'll be perfectly fine. And the next day your car is complaining that it has low pressure, but it doesn't actually have low pressure.
And the other reason that happens is because jerks engineered every part.
Possibly.
Cool, cool. Wait, what were we? Oh, yeah, we were talking about projects. So, yeah, that sounds pretty cool. So, software-defined radio.
Yeah, so it'd be a software-defined radio for listening to signals and stuff, like FM, AM, weather stations, that kind of stuff.
So
and
it's
so
a,
I want to put
it's a
I
it's
want a, to put it's a it has USB, yeah. So it's going to have a Raspberry Pi in there.
External antenna connector for it?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Cool, cool.
And I'm just going to hook it up to the stock, big FM antenna on the wagon.
that's why I asked.
Yeah, that's actually the one that it came with is just like the big FM antenna. It's just a stick antenna.
So you need Linux or some sort of operating system to use this, I assume?
Yeah, so I'm just going to put a really lightweight version of Linux on the Raspberry Pi, and so it boots fast.
Yeah, that's exactly why I asked. Because, yes, then, sometimes, depending on what it is, you can have Raspberry Pi can take like a minute or two to boot sometimes, depending on what you have.
Yeah, installed and running. And I'm going to put GPS on it because I can. Mainly because there's some cool stuff you can do with signal-defined radios in terms of listening to stuff from outer space. And so if you're in the right location, and it'll go, hey, do you want to listen to the International Space Station? Because it's right overhead. You can click the radio and you can listen to that.
Oh, that's cool. So,
yeah, I think that would be a really cool application for this thing. Is depending on where you're at, it can, like, it's like suggestions on your phone. Like, do you want to listen to this now? Because we can.
Yeah, so that's really cool that you could listen to that stuff. That sounds cool. And then you're gonna take like an old radio DIN chassis and build into it.
I'm thinking about either modifying an old one or making it from scratch. Because I have a really nice, like, large character VFD display. So mm-hmm. it'll look the part. And then just a bunch of buttons. And I've got actually a big section of dash it can go in. So it's one den tall, but I can make it, like, too wide. So I have a lot of real estate there to play with.
But it is a den slot?
The original, actually, yeah, it is a one den slot. But I can make it wider because there's a lot of dash real estate that there's nothing okay. there.
Yeah, but you don't want an LCD. You'd rather have a VFD.
Yeah, I don't want an LCD because I want it to look like it was part of the wagon. So it has to look like it was came from like the late 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main advantage of maybe having your own den is, I don't know if I've ever taken one apart, but it seems like if you had a den slot where you could like lift the lid off of it and then build everything in and then close it up, versus if you have to slide all the components outside of the den frame, it might be harder for you to assemble.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I was thinking about making it it would be its own box that kind of slides in, and then the faceplate can come off and just have a ribbon cable that connects the faceplate to the rest of the stuff in there. Mm-hmm. And so you can, like, if you need to, like, tweak something, you can without having to take the whole thing apart.
Are you going to have an RTC in there?
Real-time clock? Yeah, we can put one of those in there. There's nothing saying we can't.
That's cool.
Yeah, that way we can keep time when the engine's off.
Yeah, although you have the constant current wire going to the radio. Maybe that car doesn't. That car probably had the old push-button 8-tracks originally.
Yeah, way back in the day it did.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that sounds like a really cool
project.
That's more interesting than anything I'm working on.
Yeah, it's fun. And this is the first time I've been doing signal-defined radio stuff, so it's something completely new that I've never done before. And it's not really embedded system design either, because it's kind of like putting stuff together. I'll probably build a board I probably won't use like a regular off-shelf Raspberry Pi. I'll probably use a compute module mainly so I can get more I/O, and because I want to be able to switch between antenna sources in the future. So like mm-hmm. I'm going to put a like
hub,
a really good AM antenna in the car, because right now it just uses the big stick antenna for the AM, and those aren't really tuned too well for AM signals. And so I'm going to put a big AM antenna in the car, so that way it can the Raspberry Pi can tell, or basically use relays to switch, you know, which one to use.
What about the higher frequencies? You said it could go up to like 1 gigahertz. That's quite a ways past FM as well. Do you need a different antenna for that?
Yeah, I mean, to be tuned to it, yeah. Anything that's tuned correctly to whatever frequency, but it will probably work because it's just a big, you know, wire. It just won't be tuned to it. So
nice.
We actually had the crazy idea of potentially using like one of those antennas that are automatically extending and go back into the chassis.
Oh, so you can change its impedance by how far it's stretched?
Yeah, so you can change how much of the antenna is exposed by, you know, adjusting the motor in there. And so that's an interesting... We probably won't do that out the gate, but that's a potential improvement to the system is basically tune it to a certain frequency, right?
Right.
So, like, let's say you're listening to... Because, like, even in the FM band...
If the system had linear vertical control of the antenna, the system could basically fine tune the position of the antenna on the fly as a signal increases or degrades.
Yeah, it won't have linear control. It just has to pulse the motor. So it'll have to look at the feedback from the signal it's getting to see if the amplitude's going up or down.
But it could stop halfway if it wants, right?
Yeah. It just turns the motor off.
Cool.
Very cool. I just gotta see if that adjusting module will fit in the Jeep, because it, you know, the Jeep never had one, so we'd have to retrofit it.
Yeah, so it'd be like the Rolls Royce hood ornaments where they retract if you try to touch them.
Yes.
Cool.
Except for an antenna.
So are you going to basically make a big PCB to fit in the bottom of the DIN slot and then plug a Pi into it, like a little motherboard?
Yeah, because I also have to put in a have to do the
amplifier,
audio amplifier stuff too. Yeah, that stuff I haven't worked on yet, but it should be pretty easy.
Well, a lot of the you should maybe look at like JAMA schematics, because a lot of video game arcade boards basically use car amplifiers, so it shouldn't be that complicated.
Yeah, I've used some car amplifiers before, so this would be the first time I'd be using one inside of a car, though.
For its intended use.
Yeah, for its intended use.
Exactly, exactly. Cool. Well, yeah, maybe we should segue from that for our final topic, which is talking about your company, which is MacroFab.
Okay.
Right, so recently...
What do you want to know?
Well, recently, I... actually, there was a couple things I was working on. I was working on that D-pad circuit board, and then I ordered them from you a couple years ago, but then when I went on your site again, I dropped the same file, and it gave me a different price. So I'm like, oh, crap. So then what I did was I made a panelized version. So basically, it's one file that I would send to your site, but then I would get 16 of them in one file. That's why I was asking about V-scoring, and that's when you're like, oh, well, we put multiple orders into a single panel, and that's why we can give you a lower price, which is what Oshpark does.
Correct.
Right. Oh, maybe you should explain what V-scoring is, so if people don't know.
So V-scoring is... On a printed circuit board, a V-score is a cut or groove into the board that does not go all the way through. So it makes like a thinner spot. It's kind of like scoring glass to snap it apart.
Or how your Hershey chocolate bar has grooves in it to snap it apart.
Yeah, that works too. But the way V-scoring is done is it's not on a CNC machine. It's actually in... a machine with a circular disc that's, you know, only
like
half
a pizza,
the thickness
like
of the...
a pizza cutter.
Yeah, it's like a pizza cutter that's spinning around in there, and then you slide the board in, and it puts the groove into the board.
But since a V-score has to go all the way across the board, that doesn't work if you have multiple projects on one board, which is what you do.
Yeah, so if you have multiple designs... I mean, technically you could if all of the designs were the same shape, but that's never the case.
Right. Or if all the V-scoring took place along one axis and it was on the side of the board, so it would just only affect it.
Yes.
Yeah.
That never happens.
Well, see, the thing that I was confused about is how the price had gone up just for the same file. So I thought of like, okay, maybe since this thing is so small, you know, it makes it harder to work with, but you obviously are doing some sort of auto panelization anyway, right?
Correct.
Okay. But what?
So how the pricing works is it scales up to the nearest like square inch.
Right.
And so when you panelize it all together on your end, you basically probably got closer to whatever the roundup was. And so that's why you saw a different price.
Yeah. Because, I put the piece in, you know, by itself, and yeah, just like this little, like, I don't know, 1x1 inch PCB, and then I think originally I paid like $260 each, and I just submitted it by itself. But then when I submit that same file now, it's more expensive. But when I panelize it into a 4x4 or 16 of them in a shot, then I submit it, and then my cost goes down quite a bit.
Yes,
so
that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess the main thing, but since I can't V-score, I guess what I have to figure out is there enough clearance to, like, bandsaw it? So that's something I have to figure out before I order them from you. But probably will be a couple months before I'm actually that low. So, yeah. So Oshpark, for those that don't know, it's like a rapid prototyping PCB service, and it's in America here. So for, like, a set price, they'll make you 3 of any circuit board. And the reason it's 3 is because... they stack 3 boards on top of each other and drill them all at the same time.
Yeah, they make basically Oshpark gets 3 panels of whatever they send out from their back, basically.
Yep. So they'll have one big panel and it'll have multiple people's orders on it, kind of like a mosaic of different orders. And then you're doing the same thing, but you put everything into a single panel, and then you're also – so you don't make the PCBs, but what you do is you populate them. You put the parts on and flow them.
Correct, yeah. We do assembly.
Seems like you and Oshpark should merge or something.
We actually work when we were starting, we bought all our PCBs from Osh Park. And then
it's basically too expensive we needed to get now.
Yeah, we had to get better pricing for our PCBs. Our volume went through the roof.
Do you get them from China now?
Taiwan.
Is that not affected by tariffs? Has that affected you guys yet?
The tariffs have not really affected us at all. So it only affects buying parts from China. And the interesting thing about that is when you actually break down where your parts come from, most of them are not from China.
But Taiwan, Singapore, South Korea.
Yeah, most of your parts, like ICE, all your expensive parts are not made in China. The parts that went up in price are like resistors, capacitors that are the smaller portion of your bill of material.
Interesting.
And so that increase, it's like you're looking at like over the entire cost of your product, your bill of materials might have gone up 2-3%.
Not 25 as some people are talking about.
Correct. Yeah.
Interesting. Well, just like PCBs, I mean, there aren't that many PCB places left in America. I mean, why can't we have more? Well, I know why, but we should have more.
We should have more, yeah. I'd love to be able to, you know, offer USA-made capacitors and resistors to people, but we just don't build any here.
Well, you know, it's all the same planet, so why is it better to pollute China than to pollute here? It's kind of like not in my backyard thinking mentality.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say, well, no, that's pretty much it. It's like if you're against pollution, you should be against pollution on the entire planet since we all live in the same planet.
Yeah, that was this is a perfect world scenario.
If you're against pollution, is there anyone who's pro pollution?
Yeah, exactly. is instead of like a tariff like how they're doing now is I would be a fan of a pollution tax, basically.
Yes, if I was president, I wouldn't have like a flat tariff against China. Although I think at some point we do need to think about that because you can have all the energy independence you want, but if everything else you build is dependent on one other country, it's just as bad to be completely dependent on China as it is to be dependent on Saudi Arabia. But my idea was if you really cared about, you know, pollution and stuff, it's like, have the tariffs be based off a country's adherence to environmental standards. So if China has poor environmental standards, which they do compared to the rest of the world, they have a tariff assigned to them. So they're punished for having those poor standards, and other countries that have better standards are rewarded by having lower to no tariffs. And those tariffs would scale based off maybe the United Nations or someone basically decides, hey, how well is the country adhering to new standards? And see, because what happens now is, you know, China doesn't give a crap. They'll just pollute everything. And so since they don't care about their environment, they can make things a lot cheaper than we can in America. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. It's not just labor. It's environmental standards. But the thing is, if you talk about global warming or, you know, it's global warming, not country warming. So we're all on the same planet. It's like having a pool. And it's only okay to piss in one side of the pool, but as long as the other side has, you know, nobody pisses in that side of the pool, it's okay, right? Because, you know, the water doesn't connect, right? I mean, that's how people think, and it's stupid.
It is stupid.
But that's the thing, you know, people will, you know, spend all day blogging about, you know, environmentalism in America using their cell phone that was made in a toxic waste dump in China. And I actually mentioned that because we were talking about Foxconn one day at work, and I'm like, well, that LCD screen for your phone is going to get made no matter what. And it could be made here in America to some environmental standard, or it could be made in China to no environmental standard. Which is better? So, something to think about. I mean, anything done in America is going to be done at a much higher environmental standard than it would in China. So, yeah, why not try to do more things here?
Yep. How stuff is made. I think what it is people don't understand how things are made.
How stuff is made, your favorite TV show.
Yeah. How is that cell phone manufactured and what actually goes into it? It's like how
I highly doubt Trump knows how a cell phone is made.
I would agree with that as well.
He probably knows how a building is made.
Yeah. It's like buying a new car. The thing is about buying a brand new car is the energy required to build a new car is more than what that car will consume in gasoline or any other kind of energy it's using. And so keeping an old inefficient car is actually more energy conserving or conservation, I guess, than buying a new efficient
car. But if you don't build a new car, you don't propel the economy and keep people employed. I mean, that's kind of talking about like, you know, planned obsolescence for, you know, growing the economy. You got to have new stuff. It's unfortunate. If you drive like a somewhat energy efficient older car, you probably have a smaller carbon footprint than someone that buys a new Tesla every 3 years.
Or a Prius or whatever. Yeah.
Right. You remember the Super Beetle? You know, you had the original Volkswagen Beetle, which was bulletproof, and they actually redesigned it and made it into a Super Beetle, which was basically a Beetle that would break. So they could sell
it had a bunch
of
electronics and shit in it that would always break.
Yeah, that's a sad thing. I think, you know, if people really wanted to embrace environmentalism and trying to preserve the planet, a lot of basic consumer habits would have to fundamentally change. Like the fact that, I mean, think about just how much waste is generated by fast food. That's incredibly wasteful.
Food packaging.
Yeah, or food. That's incredibly wasteful. And, you know, but you see,
we have to go after those straws, man. We have to ban straws.
Oh, God.
That's the number one evil.
Talk about a straw man argument. Yeah, I thought about that. I was at Buffalo Wild Wings, and I actually never use straws if I have like a glass of Coke or something. And they handed me a straw, and I handed it back. And I'm like, if you were in California, you'd be in jail. But actually, you know, I know that sounds silly, but like but of course, you know, obviously everyone has their own opinion, which is based off bias. But for myself, I never use a straw with a glass of Coke. So I would actually prefer that they don't give me one and I have to ask it, because that's the thing. Like if they hand me that straw and that straw is right next to my napkin or whatever, it's just going to get thrown in the garbage. It'd be better for it not to be brought out in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. That said, I still use plastic bags at the grocery store. So,
I get plastic bags and then I reuse them for like my lunches and stuff.
Yeah, I've got one right here in my trash bin. Actually, I found when I made my automatic trash door.
Upcycling.
I found a bin that was designed to hold the plastic bag. It was a plastic shopping bag trash bin. It actually has hooks or whatever specifically for it. You know where the handles go?
Yeah, that's so cool.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, isn't paper like one of the most pointless things to recycle? So I don't see why someone should be sanctimonious about using a paper shopping bag. Also, they suck compared to plastic. They take up more space. Like, what do people do with them? I mean, why is it better?
So this is funny. Here at our house we have a trash receptacle in the pantry, right? And it's got a plastic bag on the inside that's a normal trash bag, right?
Uh-huh.
But then we put our paper bags inside that. And so when you take the trash out, you just take the paper one out and leave the plastic one in there just to catch liquids. And so you can keep reusing the plastic one.
Makes
sense.
Until
it gets nasty. Yeah. So I actually like paper bags a lot because they're actually pretty useful for carrying like heavier things. But the plastic I use all the time too for, you know, temporary trash cans and stuff, or trash bags.
Well, they started recycling them here in Madison like 3 or 4 years ago. So if you have extra ones, which you inevitably do, you just put them in the recycling bin.
That's cool.
I mean, I would think a bag like that probably would actually only take, it probably doesn't take that much resources to create that. I mean, it's so thin. So
probably.
Yeah. Also, if hippies if people really wanted to help the environment, they would go after junk mail. It's
junk mail, yeah.
I think it's gotten worse since I got a house. It's ridiculous. That's all I get. It's like 90% junk mail. It's like basically we have an industry that prints garbage, and then we have another industry that uses fuel to transport the garbage, to put it in your mailbox, and then you put it in the garbage bin or the recycling bin. If any other industry was doing that wasn't associated with the government would be on their ass, like stink on shit. But if it's the Postal Service hauling garbage, basically they're hauling garbage. They're creating and hauling garbage, and nobody cares? It's like, who reads those things? I should be like, I am not a 70-year-old woman. Can I opt out of getting coupons that I will never even look at, please? Save the environment.
But man, straws are evil.
I bet you there's far more, junk mail waste in the country than there is straw waste.
Oh yeah, there's how much percentage of plastic waste is straws, and it's something like 0.0001% of all plastic waste is straws.
I still think that you shouldn't like fine a waiter for that, because you know waiters don't make that much money. Find the business, if anything, and then the business could fire the waiter if they don't do it. But it sounds ridiculous on paper, and I know it is a drop in the bucket, but eventually when our planet is filled with garbage and we have 20 billion people and we have no room, we will have to start thinking about, we'll be forced to do things like that. It'll be like Waterworld. We'll have no choice, you know? Mm-hmm. That's why I have no guilt about eating meat. I'll probably live long enough to see meat be unaffordable to consume. So I'm just going to eat it now and enjoy it.
I don't think it's going to happen.
You think the population of Earth is going to decline?
No. We're pretty good at mass manufacturing cows.
Yeah, there's only so much land.
Got a lot of land that we're not using yet. I wouldn't worry about it.
That's true. We haven't turned down the entire Amazon yet. Yep. Yet. And you know what? When they tear down the Amazon, they don't just do it to piss people off. Guess what they do with the land? Cattle raising.
Making that meat.
Okay. Well, I think we're probably out of time here. But there you go. We talked about video games, Battlefield 5, and environmentalism.
In one episode.
All right. Well, let us know what you thought of the podcast in the comments below. And I guess we'll see you next month. Joan should be back, and maybe there'll be some new games we've played by then.
Okay, cool.
All right, later, everyone.
Later.